CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. I'm Gareth Cliff. Sia Sangweni's here. Leanne Moll is here. And we are ready to take care of you through the course of your Tuesday. It's going to be a short week. And yesterday was Human Rights Day. If you're wondering what the hell was going on and you're wondering why you suddenly benefited from a bonus holiday, because sometimes people don't know what the purpose of a holiday is. Sometimes people forget that they're even there. And this one happened on Sunday, so we actually got the Monday as a bonus. You know, that happens. If the public holiday falls on a Monday, then you get the Monday.
Bonus.
So we're happy about that. I do have to remind you also, at 7:30 we're going to be joined by Pierre van der Hoeven, who is the joint CEO of something called Silverleaf Investments. So I want you to listen to this, because over the last couple of months, the cannabis market, since it's become legalized here and in other parts of the world too, has exploded. It's become a really, really interesting place for investors. It's currently estimated to be around $30 billion. It's anticipated to reach somewhere between $75 and $100 billion by 2030.
Ooh.
So people are talking about, you know, should we invest in cannabis? And we'll find out from Pierre a little bit later on, because he started a vehicle that may be interesting to people who are looking at investing. And we'll see whether or
not. What I really want to find out from him is it a mere coincidence
mm-hmm.
that he is the joint CEO? Sorry,
right.
Back
all
to
right,
you
all
being
right,
serious.
All right, of course, let's be serious. So, speaking of serious, we've got some very serious stories in the news today. And one of those stories is the one that Leanne is about to talk to us about now. This is a concerning issue that she's picked up, and it's a news story which we thought we would need to discuss. So, Leanne, where do we begin with your penis story? This is quite a big deal. What exactly is the background here, and how did you come upon this story?
Well, it's to be fair, for a long time now, women's fertility has been linked to chemicals that we find in our plastics. And I mean, we need to also understand that there is plastic even in the water that we drink.
Yes.
So these dangerous chemicals that we're consuming come from these forever plastics, which just never, ever go away. And a lot of them are from electronics.
Mm.
And that's been messing with women's fertility and also with gestation as well. Now it's coming to the fore that it's men's penises and sperm counts that are also being affected. And it's all come up just recently because of a book by, an epidemiologist, who, her name is Shana Swan. And she's very much into how the environment's linked to reproduction.
Okay.
And she is saying that because of these harmful chemicals, they're actually starting to change during gestation, the development of the penis. And not only that, but also the anogenital gap,
that's a gap between your anus and your genitalia.
Yes.
Oh.
And apparently, in men, that's starting to shorten.
Oh, no.
So
our penises might actually fall into our own assholes at some point. That's very scary.
So the whole theory behind this is that eventually it'll become one area.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
No.
This is it's really very concerning. So out of all of this also came out that the average 20-something woman today is less fertile than her grandmother was at the age of 35.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh.
Also that men have half the sperm counts of their grandfathers.
Right.
At their respective ages.
Oh.
So it's also decreasing the quality of semen as well.
No.
So
No, it's all just it's all bad news. Let's just take a little bit of bad news at a time, Leanne. Don't overwhelm us. This is all very, very scary for not just for men but for women, because obviously if the you know, if the men let the women down, then there's no point really. There's no point in us.
And it's interesting. It's interesting as well that there, you know, some of these fantastical, futuristic movies and series focus a lot on how humans can no longer reproduce in a, in a normal fashion.
Yes.
And that's what's coming out of this. And of the five possible criteria for what makes a species endangered, humans already face three of the five.
Oh, my God. Very, very bad news. So basically, this we may be the last generation of the last generation of men with decent penises and a good gap between the anus and the penis, the anus and the balls.
Gooch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We may be the last ones, everybody.
I just can't picture it. How that will look once it's all one? Like how?
Very bad is the answer. Yeah, very bad is the answer. That's all we can say.
You could be weeing out of your bum before you know it.
Well, very, very bad. I don't like any of this. I think we've got to get this pollution thing under control. I, for one, am going to start recycling today. And I'm going to make sure that I do not drive anything but an electric car from this point on. This is terrible. Terrible, terrible stuff. I mean, B's GTA Online says, does this mean when this happens, you could literally go and fuck yourself? Yes, probably.
Wow.
Terrible, terrible stuff.
Yeah, pretty scary, man.
I don't like it. So there's a lot to think about. There's a lot to think about today. All right. I do want to talk about something that happened on the internet, because I love these internet non-controversies. For the day or the night or the week that it's a big deal, right? And everybody's talking about it. But then the week afterwards, it doesn't matter anymore. Do you remember how serious the shampoo thing was last year? The normal shampoo thing? And what a big deal it was, and how everyone was terribly upset about this? Of course, a week later, nobody cared. So this is going to be one of those as well. Apparently, Jerusalema, you know the song Jerusalema, the singer, Noam Qebo, is shocked after a white Bulgarian singer painted their face black during a Jerusalema performance. So I saw this and I thought, first of all, wow, it really does look like a black girl. She's wearing a whole face mask, essentially. And in the world of deep fakes, this is going to happen. If you think race is important, if you've prioritized race, if it's a big deal to you, if race really matters in your life, you are in for a world of pain, because there is going to be a point in the future where there's going to be a filter that allows white people to pretend they're black and black people to pretend they're white. It's going to happen. You know, they're probably already developing filters on these phones to do that. Maybe there's already one. I don't know. You know, the deep fakes are going to allow you to go back into the past, take photographs of yourself, and change your race or change your gender. You know that, right? I mean, you can already like make yourself look like a girl if you're a guy, or make yourself look like a guy if you're a girl. There are filters for all this.
Or older.
So if you are one of those people who thinks race is a very, very important part of who you are, you're about to hit the skids. This is not a great time for you to be alive and to have those ideas. It's going to matter very little in a future where all of this is going to be made up on the spot by someone who identifies, you know, the Rachel Dolezals of the world. When Rachel Dolezal famously was that woman who said, even though she had two white parents, that she was black and she identified as black. Or Meghan and Harry's child, who's like 25% black, but Meghan calls her child a black child. So you figure this out, and if it bothers you, if you are a racist, basically, then it's going to become a very messy world for you. But watch this video and you decide if this isn't really interesting. It's really like something we're going to have to deal with at some point. Look at the makeup that's being done here. It's quite incredible what people can do. And this isn't even filters or deep fakes. This is just good makeup. So watch this. Ha ha. So, so again,
facial expression right at the end.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys think of this? Because we're gonna have to deal with these things. We're gonna have to figure out where we sit on this.
Yeah, and also is that considered blackface?
Mm.
Because to me, blackface is, you know, carelessly painting your face black, and you can see that you're a white person. Whereas that is like top-notch stage makeup.
Yeah. And by the way, let me just explain
your comments. Sorry,
the whole show, guys, that this woman appeared on, this Bulgarian singer, right, the white singer. The whole point of the show is to impersonate somebody. So in other words, you've got to look as much like them as possible.
Mm. Whether that's making yourself look older or thinner or fatter.
Correct.
Or,
mm-hmm. Correct.
Whatever.
So the whole point is you've got to look exactly like this.
Capivoda.
There we go. I mean, who doesn't want to be on that show? The fact is, if I were to go on and I were to impersonate Michael Jackson, I would keep exactly the color you see me having now. In fact, I might even have to go a bit paler, right? And then I'd put on a wig,
yeah,
like Michael Jackson, and a hat, and the white socks and black shoes, and the pants with the stripe, the red stripe down the side, and I'd have to learn how to do the moonwalk. And then I might do okay. First of all, isn't it great that on this show in Bulgaria, of all fucking places, they are doing Jerusalem? Let's first of all give credit to Nomcebo and everybody else who had some hand in making that song, because it became an international sensation. The fact that some Bulgarian...
Master KG is the DJ. Yeah.
Great. The fact that some Bulgarian is singing it is a huge credit to them, because it means it's a big, mainstream, popular international song, even in places like Bulgaria, where I can promise you they don't speak any of our languages. Not any of them. So let's take credit for that, first of all. Now, is it a problem if someone dresses up to impersonate a famous singer? And if you think that is a problem, you need to explain to me why.
You see, that's why I wanted to refine Leanne's comment or definition around blackface. I don't think this is blackface. Might be a very unpopular opinion, but yeah, blackface to me is something that is done to put down black people, or something right. that has these racist connotations
right.
with it and to it. And that's why I think sometimes it's been taken a little too far in the context of Halloween, for example. But when you now also know the setting of this show, and I have to be honest, I didn't have this opinion over the weekend, but it was my sister who first said, if you dressed up as Elvis, what would you do? You would dress up in a particular way. Mm. If you wanted to dress up, and as you said, Gareth, as Michael Jackson, you would dress up in a certain way. You know, if it was just a performance in general, and you say, then why didn't they hire the real Nomcebo, or why didn't she just perform the song as herself? But if the whole premise of the show mm-hmm. is to recreate these popular hits, and she'd go out there and start clicking a little, you know, trying to be ignorant and speaking an African language. She was performing the song. And let me say, she kind of also did perform the song well.
Yes,
like, I'm not saying she's going to be a chart topper tomorrow.
No, she did.
Because she did the performance. So
again, I'm going to say that this is stupid leftist purism at its you know, at the really dumb end of the curve. This is where a bunch of people who believe that everything is racist are trying to find racism in everything, even in something as innocent as somebody impersonating a great singer. And by the way, if you're one of those people who's upset on Nomcebo's behalf, good for you. You're a complete moron, and I congratulate you on your stupidity. That's all. You have no reason to be offended on someone else's behalf.
If you're also upset about this,
yeah,
we have to unfortunately look at the other side of the scale and say, well, why is there a double standard then?
Mm-hmm.
And when is it then should White Chicks with the Wayans brothers be cancelled.
Which, by the way, that was one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. And if they hadn't been allowed to make that movie because a bunch of politically correct people had stopped them, we would have missed out on that brilliant scene in the car where they're singing, what is that song?
Making my way downtown.
We would have missed out on that, which is easily one of the funniest things I've ever seen. All right, that Vanessa, what was it? Who was that singer? Samantha,
yes,
I don't know.
Vanessa, you're right. Yeah. Vanessa something. I nearly called her Vanessa Carrera, and I thought, no, that's almost South Africa.
Vanessa Carlton. Vanessa Carlton. 1,000 Miles.
Yes, that's right.
Hilarious, hilarious movie. And I encourage everybody to watch White Chicks. Now, also, someone making the point here, Pumlani, saying, should Eddie Murphy also be cancelled and with Martin Lawrence for wearing fat suits or makeup as old people? You see, this is where it goes. If you stop having a sense of humor about this stuff and everything becomes political, you become a total moron. You become one of those people who's just not able to find anything funny anymore. That's not a world I want to live in. So I think it's really, really stupid. And if anyone was genuinely offended by what they saw with this Nomcebo thing, then you're an ass. And I would not want to be around you, and you're not the kind of person I would like to have around me either. You're not going to make anyone laugh. You're not going to make any experience better. You're the kind of person who makes everything worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it perhaps the smartest decision, despite the huge success of the song, but knowing how ultra-sensitive everything is, was it the smartest decision to go with? I don't think so.
Well, then we're not going to have any...
Yeah, my stance remains.
We're not going to be any little boys and girls. Imagine, you know, if you're a little young white boy or girl and you look up to Nomcebo and you love that song because she's your hero and she's your cultural icon and she's your singing icon, are you now going to have your whole life to try and avoid... doing her any kind of tribute because you're afraid of upsetting these PC idiots? Hell no. Absolutely not. I would say, you go ahead. And if you're a little white kid and you are scared of putting on blackface, but the reason that you want to pay tribute to someone is because you love and adore them, you do it. And screw the people who are going to call you whatever. Screw them. Don't worry about them.
I think context is probably the biggest thing here, and that's the show is all about impersonating people. And then the second biggest thing for me is that it wasn't derogatory at all, her performance. So that would need to be taken into account.
Well, there are a lot of people who are bringing up things much closer to home, like, for example, the Leon Schuster movies. Where some of those are banned on Showmax because it's like he's putting on blackface. But he's playing characters. He's not ripping off a particular black person. And he rips off white people as well as he does blacks, if you're going to argue that. So I don't know that this is going to get us anywhere except to a dark place where we all hate each other. Isn't the whole point of this to celebrate each other and to make fun in a lighthearted way, not to be mean, not to be derogatory, but to make fun? To take the piss. Have we lost the ability to do that? It's all just very, very sad to me. And the fact that there are people in this world who seek to take all the fun out of things and make everything a political statement, those people are just deeply, deeply disturbed. I can't see a way for them to ever be happy. So there it is. I mean, I don't know whether you've got anything else to say about it.
Yeah, no, that's it.
That's it, huh? Okay.
What a long, eventful weekend.
I know.
These are all just things from the weekend.
So much happening. Just incredible. Yeah, it really is. So, Sia, please tell us about this prisoner, because that was also a big controversy.
More from the weekend, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not finished yet, everybody.
It starts with some context, but then also why this surprises me is because of how social media has taken it upon itself to solve this whole thing within a matter of hours. So I think it was Thursday that this really blew out quite a lot. And that was this sex tape from a KZN prison.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the fact that whenever I'm in KZN, somehow there are all of these scandals, but yes.
Yeah.
It's from this place called Ngoma, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. And as what you're showing right now, if you're watching on YouTube, is a screenshot from the sex tape, which is a prisoner who had full-blown sex with a warden. Mm. Within a matter of hours of this tape being out, people have now been able to piece together and identify who this correctional services officer is,
yeah,
and who the prisoner is, and the fact that the officer's married and how long they've been married.
The warden is a woman in this case, mm-hmm, and the prisoner is a male prisoner, and he's wearing his orange uniform in the picture, so that, you know, if you're not watching us on YouTube, you know what's going on. He's wearing his orange uniform, and he's leaning over, they're holding hands, and he's kissing her. And she seems to be kissing him back from the picture. So it's not a...
But this is just a PG-13 version.
Yeah, that's just that picture, because they do have sex afterwards. And it seems to be like consensual relationship-type sex. So they've obviously fallen for each other. I mean, she may have a husband, but don't pretend this doesn't happen outside of prison. Apparently, I've heard some stories that this warden, Vasitsana says, might have committed suicide. Is that true?
And that has been debunked. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's one of the rumors over the weekend.
Thank God.
But no, the Department of Correctional Services debunked that and just simply said that there's a lot of investigations underway to get to the bottom of this. But I'm like, well, sorry, Twitter has jumped ahead of you here.
So did they not know that there was a camera in the vicinity that filmed all
this?
They
knew. They
knew.
Yes.
They knew.
They set it up.
Oh, wow. They actually set the... this is new.
But then what? But then why? What's the context?
Of?
Why would they want to film themselves having sex?
Leanne, if you have a relationship, and particularly if it is behind bars, don't you feel for the prisoner, you want to leave him with something for nice times later?
Oh, you mean it was like,
it was like a sex video?
That's very exciting.
for you to remember me by later on. Wow. Which,
very exciting.
Okay, so it was to be put into the wank bank, in other words.
Perhaps, maybe, allegedly. But,
but it was only meant for them. They didn't mean this to go public.
Well, we don't know. And also, think of it from the perspective of the prisoner. If that was me, I would definitely want to show it off and be like, oh, look what I did. You'll never guess what I did. And you'll want to share it with your friends.
It's a bit of a badge of honor.
Listen, if I banged someone really famous and amazing, I still wouldn't want it in the public view.
No, well, that's...
I mean, if it was me and Justin Bieber, I still wouldn't want people to see.
You wouldn't. But that's what makes you slightly different to people who couldn't care less, or people who really want to be famous for it. I mean, let's not forget that the two most famous women for being famous, they're not famous for any real reason in the world right now, are still Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian, and we know what they did to get there. So yeah, it depends on what your...
Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, it depends on what your motives are, and let's not forget.
Mm.
For some people, this is the way to become an influencer, you know. Ugh.
Now that I know their names, I'm thinking of sending them a message and going like, listen, as long as I take 15% out of this, we can make some money.
Sia's
call it effed by the law.
Sia's going to become their agent, and he's going to run things for them from now on.
Or F the police.
Unbelievable. All right, well.
That'd be their brand. We'll do something.
I mentioned that the legal cannabis market is currently estimated to be around $30 billion, and it's anticipated to reach somewhere between $75 billion and $100 billion by 2030. So it's become an area of real interest to people who deal with investment. And for a lot of people, there's a huge amount of opportunity in this world. We're going to find out about this together now. Pierre van der Hoeven is the joint CEO. We have to call you the joint CEO because, as Sia pointed out earlier, that makes it extra funny, of Silverleaf Investments, which is a cannabis-focused fund focused on the industry's local growth. And here in South Africa, there's obviously a massive opportunity too. So Pierre is here to tell us more. How are you, Pierre? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you, Gareth?
Good. Nice to see you. So tell us quickly. Tell us about the background and how you got into this, because you've done a lot of different business stuff in your life and you have experience across a range of different areas. What attracted you to weed?
Yeah, Gareth, you know, I grew up in the Eastern Cape as a surfer. It was always around us. I went to Rhodes University. It was around us. But it was this sort of, you know, sneak around the corner kind of industry. But then about many years ago, I started watching the industry developing overseas, and it's become a huge job generator. It's become the fastest growing industry in the world. You know, all the myths have now been exposed. In 2018, I wrote to the government. The media industry was slowing down. You know my history behind that. And yeah. I wrote a proposal to the government and said, you know, I think this is a silver bullet for South Africa. To their credit, they commissioned me to write a report, which I did. And it's played out exactly like that. It's exploding all over the world, and South Africa is perfectly positioned to enter this industry. And it's really not about smoking a joint around the corner. If we talk hemp, for example, we're talking climate change. We're talking improving the soil. We're talking about saving forests.
You mentioned the Eastern Cape, and that's interesting to me because obviously the Eastern Cape is one of the provinces in this country that has had the toughest time during COVID. We know that unemployment has skyrocketed in that province. The government there has let everyone down. It's a disaster in terms of how it's been run. And really, the Eastern Cape is a great place to grow weed. It's got almost the perfect climate. We grow some really good stuff down there, apparently. And we've got people who already are growing it in a subsistence manner, and they could find ways to make themselves really economically independent. This is surely something that the government should prioritize.
Well, actually, they have. If you've heard feedback from the East Cape Premier, now all the premiers actually are saying that they're seeing this as a really important area for economic growth. Yeah, the Eastern Cape, it's called the Dacha Belt for a reason. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of farmers there that need to be brought into the field. So on the one hand, you've got the economic cluster going, let's do it, let's do it. On the other hand, you've got the justice cluster still using it to arrest people, which is tragic and should be stopped, even despite our constitutional court hearing. So yeah, it really is a silver bullet for the Eastern Cape. The trick is, how do we bring the illicit market into the legal market? And there the answer is very simple. You build a value chain so that they can sell their produce to a legal producer. So we feel very strongly that the potential in the Eastern Cape is massive.
Tell me, Pierre, how does it all work in terms of the actual breakdown of the different areas in which people can get involved? I mean, everyone's thinking, well, you have to grow it or you have to manufacture something out of it. But there are many more phases to this. There's obviously a value chain that is built up over, you know, the course of the production, the seed stage, the different kinds of things that can be manufactured. And then, of course, merchandising, sales, ultimately marketing, and then the stage of investment where, you know, your company is obviously looking at getting much more heavily invested in various stages of that value chain. Tell me how you see it playing out.
Yeah, so the value chain, quite simply, is put plants in the ground, take them out the ground, process them, turn them into products, and then create brands. So very simply, that's the value chain. So the first step is getting plants in the ground, and yeah, we've got a couple of categories. So if you want to just smoke weed, it's already legal. You're allowed to grow for private use, but you're not allowed to sell. If you'd like to get into the medicinal cannabis area, then you go to SAPRA, you get a license, barrier to entry is high, it's very expensive. We're waiting for legislation, and this is the tragedy we're living with right now. The hemp industry has been put on hold for almost a year now while we wait for legislation. So when that opens, we're going to get hemp plants in the ground, and then we've got to process the fiber. Once we've got processing factories, then we can start processing further, creating products, and finally brands. So the long-term vision is certainly to beneficiate in South Africa. We don't want to be turned into farmers again. We want to create medicinal products. We want to create industrial products. There are over 25,000. You know, they're crazy examples that the door panels for Mercedes-Benz, which are built in the Eastern Cape, are imported, and they're made from hemp. So, yeah, we need to get the value chain right.
That's incredible. Even in a car's door panels, you could use hemp. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Henry Ford built a car. The entire car was made for hemp, and he has a really amazing bit. It ran on hemp fuel.
So what's the
For some of the racing cars now, it's a composite material. It's the strongest material on the planet, and it's incredibly light and bio-friendly. I mean, if you go further, you can use hemp to build superconductors, microchips.
What? That's incredible.
Through a product called graphene. Yeah, so it's a really interesting plant. It is the miracle plant, and we blessed as a country. Cannabis loves Africa, and Africa loves cannabis.
What are the legal roadblocks and obstacles to all of this happening and happening fast? Because you mentioned earlier how the justice cluster and government are still looking at it as, you know, an illegal activity to grow more than a certain amount, to sell or buy more than a certain amount of this. And I'm not just talking about for recreational purposes, even medicinal. What are the laws at the moment, and how do we fast track improvements in that legislation?
So let's start with the recreational. Our constitutional court said we have a right to privacy. We're allowed to smoke and grow in our own environment. The government was given 2 years to come up with legislation, and that was 18th of September last year. They didn't do it. It was the draft cannabis bill saying you can only have so many plants. It was never accepted. It's been rejected by sectors of government and the private sector. So we're waiting for clarity there.
Okay.
In terms of medicinal cannabis, you go to SAPRA, you apply for a license, and that's starting to gain a little bit of momentum. We're not sure how many licenses are being issued, but we estimate about 25. And the speed of those licenses seems to be increasing. So it seems to be that SAPRA is getting their act together and speeding up around medicinal. The tragedy is around hemp. SAPRA just said hemp is an industrial crop. It was handed over to Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and they're sitting on it. So we're waiting with bated breath. That could happen any day. And that will be the real boost that will change the industry. So those are the major sectors. Policy-wise, we're on about our fifth master plan. The government is just not moving very well, and it's not coordinated. So we've got some real legal roadblocks, but they're unraveling. You know, there's a lot happening in the industry, for example, which puts the South African government under pressure. Mexico legalized last week, so America now has a legal country, Canada, to the north, and legal in Mexico to the south, and they're moving fast. So it's coming, but not quick enough.
Yeah. Listen, I think that, you know, in any place, the last people to catch on are probably the government. But in this case, if we were interested in investing in something like, you know, like the cannabis industry, even if it's just nascent at the moment, even if there isn't enough going on right now, how would you even go about that? I mean, is your business also a vehicle for investment?
Yeah, so one of the big problems we experienced in the industry was there was a lack of credibility with the money guys. There was uncertainty. They called it regulatory uncertainty. They didn't want to put money in. On the other side, there was you know, a couple of cannabis guys running around, stoners, drug lords, trying to raise capital, trying to get into the legal industry, and that created a lot of distrust as well, which is quite well deserved, actually.
Yeah.
There's some crazy people in this industry. So what we tried to create was a bridge between the two, a credible listed entity under very strict regulation, good corporate governance, and now we're providing a vehicle for the average man in the street to invest in Silverleaf Fund, and Silverleaf Fund would then analyze investments and invest in the underlying assets. So that's what we've done. We've created a fund called Silverleaf. We're in the process of raising capital, and anybody can invest in our fund. If you can go to the website silverleafinvestments.co.za, and it's a matter of expressing your interest, paying the money. We're currently under the Section 12J structure, which means you get a full tax deduction for your full investment.
Right.
And then your money must stay there for 4 years. We're looking to morph into a full-blown venture capital company without those restrictions and without the tax benefits, because some of the restrictions are a little restrictive. There's the yeah. quantums are too small, that kind of stuff. You need big money in cannabis.
And as you say, it's something fair enough to comment on, is that, you know, lots of people look at people who might want to go into this business seriously, and they look at them and go, well, they must be stoners just because they're interested in marijuana and hemp and cannabis. But that's not really the case at all. You do want to find credible, sensible people, though, because we're talking about money here. We're not just talking about weed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you want to go into the industry to smoke more weed, well, good news for you. It's already legal. You're allowed to smoke. Off you go.
Right.
Just don't do it in public and in front of kids. You sort it out. On the other hand, this is a business. This is a very high-tech business. You know, you've got companies in Canada that are worth billions of dollars. One transaction, $7.3 billion. The industry is now heading towards $100 billion. These are big numbers. This is proper business. This is guys with white suits and, you know, PhDs. This is not a mess around.
Right.
This is a real industry.
Well, listen, thanks for filling us in on the details of it. I wish you guys luck. I think it's a terrific thing to see opportunities like this and to get stuck into them ASAP, because, you know, if you're in early, you end up making most of the money. As they say, that, you know, you get in on the ground floor and then you could seriously go all the way up with the lift. And before you know it, you could make yourself a fairly wealthy individual out of this burgeoning new industry. And Pierre, well done to you guys for jumping on that bandwagon early on. Yeah, and nice to see you again.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, Gareth. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks, Sia. Thanks.
Yeah, Leanne. Yeah, no problem. We're all here. None of us, unfortunately, are particularly big recreational smokers of weed, but we may just end up being hemp product buyers, for all you know. In fact, I think most of the world doesn't even realize that we are hemp product buyers in some way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Right. We'll all become users in the end, but maybe, well, probably not in the smoking form.
I love it. Thanks so much, Pierre. Good to see you. There's
Thank
Pierre
you.
Van der Hoeven.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Very good. Pierre Van der Hoeven. It's cool stuff, huh? There's a lot of new industries that are making their way onto the scene. This is not so new. I mean, we've been talking about this for maybe 3 years or so since they started to open up a little bit more and more to the idea of it. But I think it's great. The more the merrier.
So interesting. I can't imagine how frustrating it must be, especially listening to the hemp side of things,
yeah.
not being able to grow marijuana for the purposes of hemp,
yeah.
and having to import hemp from other countries when we're so perfectly capable of growing it ourselves.
It's ridiculous.
Mm.
Kind of silly. Apparently,
opportunity that lies here. Wow.
Apparently, just to go to COVID for a little bit, apparently in America, Krispy Kreme donuts are going to give people free donuts all year long if you've got a COVID-19 vaccination card. I think this is a terrible idea.
Well, because they're donuts?
Yes, because...
Like if it was carrots, it might be better.
Well, I mean, listen, we've been talking on the show about how obesity is one of the comorbidities for COVID. And just because you've gone and got your vaccination doesn't mean that you aren't detrimentally affecting your health by eating tons and tons of donuts. And remember, this is free donuts. The problem here is, like, free donuts for the year, I think that's just an invitation to disaster for a bunch of people who already the price isn't really a factor when they come to buying them. I think this is a dangerous idea.
So to be clear, it's one free original glazed daily.
Oh, my God. No. This is terrible.
There's no one that can lose weight or be healthy having a donut a day, surely.
No way. Donuts have got to be. Even I, as a person, I know how good those donuts are, those Krispy Kremes. I've had them before. We've actually had them at events of ours, right? And they are really magic. But let me tell you something. I know straight away when I look at a donut, I'm like, I just know that's not good for me.
Pop it in the microwave
besides,
13 seconds.
Ooh. Besides being deep fried, it's also obviously laden in sugar.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, let's take away the fact that it's Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah.
If it was some other product, maybe if it was, you know, at Kauai, you can have an immune booster shot every day. Yep. Then that would be more acceptable.
That's it.
But I wonder if any other companies or any companies in South Africa would be as brazen enough to do something like this. I doubt it.
Well, as you say, like, let's have something healthy. You know, let's encourage people to not get worse, but to try and get better. That would be a very good idea. But look, well done to Krispy Kreme for, you know, trying to reward people for being socially responsible and getting their shot and helping with herd immunity and all the rest of it. But your product is not particularly a good idea for people who already are dealing with health issues. And if you're getting one donut a day, that's a hell of a lot of donuts. That's a lot of extra kilos by the end of the year. Know what I mean?
Yeah. Oof. I mean, I suppose they probably sat down and thought, okay, how's this going to work out financially for us?
Yeah.
What if this amount of people came every day? But they probably thought people might not come every day.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Oh. But you know what? Sometimes you really don't have to reinvent the wheel and think about how much or how quickly people buy into something. The example that I'm thinking of is Global Citizen, how when people were just dying to see Ed Sheeran or Usher or Beyonce, everyone became a community service advocate, and they were tweeting up a storm because that would rake up points, or they would go out and help their communities because you could get points, and that's how you went into the draw for the tickets. So something like this, believe you me, there are some people who probably don't even walk anymore and who commute using those. What are they? Mm-mm. It's not a wheelchair, but it's like those old school.
What, like a Zimmer frame?
Yeah, a motorized one, though.
Oh, those ones, okay. You know? Right, okay.
Yeah, because of how chunky they are. Who'll use this as motivation?
Yeah.
Even just Joe Soap, me, I would even use this as motivation now. So good going for them.
Yeah, please, let's not give donuts to people who already have weight problems. There's some good news. I know that a lot of us are big fans of a show called Sex Education. They're filming season 3 at the moment. In fact, Lad Bible reporting this morning that Sex Education season 3 has finished filming, so that'll be available soon. Starring, of course, someone who's just like Sia Sangweni Finn. Yes. What's his name?
I still haven't gotten into it. I don't know if I'm missing out.
Yeah, you're missing out on.
Yeah, you are missing out.
It is such a great show. I've forgotten the guy's name. He's there in the bottom right of the screen. He is such an awesome character, and he reminds everybody of Sia. If you've met Sia once, you'll see what we mean. And it's not the obvious thing. It's the amount of
Eric.
Drama.
Eric, is that his name?
Thank you, Eric. Yeah, correct. So it's just a great, great show. And I love all the characters. It's so funny. It's so clever. It's so 21st century.
Very
it's
clever,
awesome.
Yeah.
So it's well written. And my favorite character in the whole thing is probably Gillian Anderson, who plays the mother.
Yes, mine too.
Oh, she's awesome. She's just so cool.
Isn't she? I never ever saw her, Gillian Anderson, throughout the years as incredibly attractive. But in this, she really is.
She's just so maybe it's her whole attitude as the sex therapist in this show that makes it interesting. But she's got this really kind of forward thinking, very cool, calm and collected, very laid back, uncontroversial approach to sex. And maybe that's part of it. But she does. She looks really good, too. That's got to be said.
Yeah.
So Sex Education season 3 coming out. And do you know what I saw? Someone posted a Facebook clip over the weekend of Moira from Schitt's Creek. And it suddenly made me think I've got to get back into that because I fell off that wagon somewhere in, you know, somewhere in season 3.
I watched the whole thing in as part of a binge.
Mm.
I'd never seen it before.
Yeah. No, it's a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
amazing. Just,
it is a terrific show. So if you're looking for TV shows to watch, that those two sound like good options at the moment. Then just to quickly refer to something that came up on social media as well over the weekend, and someone sent this to me. Have you noticed that Oprah in the Meghan interview looks a lot like Samuel L. Jackson with a wig on? Now, I know this is upsetting to people
come
like Sia. Just look at this. Tell me you don't think that that's... I mean...
No, but that photo of Oprah is doctored, obviously.
Of course it's doctored. It's the Samuel L. Jackson. But that's... If you look at it, because of the glasses... I've got to tell you, I mean, I even joked on my TV show about Oprah's... you know, Tina Turner wig from the 80s and her Elton John glasses. But that was not a great combo. And if you've seen the pictures, just imagine Samuel L. Jackson wearing his trademark round glasses, which he wears often, and then compare that with what Oprah was wearing. And there is a similarity, I think, much more than most people would like, especially Sia.
No, I do not think so at all.
Of course you don't think so. Other people do.
No, I prefer my Oprah through the ages.
Okay.
This weekend I got stuck in my Oprah from the early 2000s because I rewatched her interview with Tom Cruise. Don't ask me why. It was just one of those rabbit holes that I went into with my Oprah archive.
Okay.
And I still think,
yeah,
what a crackpot we went through with Tom.
Tom Cruise is insane. And the fact that Oprah... I think that did more damage to his reputation than any other interview. So good.
That's when it all started falling apart.
It did.
Mm.
I mean, from that point on, we realized this guy was not all there. He was not okay, right? Somewhere in that interview, everybody who watched was going, there's something not right about that guy. And up to then, we thought he was this very cool movie star because they managed his reputation so well. You just leave him with Oprah for long enough, and she will bring out the beast. Anyway, I saw this about Meghan. I don't want to go on about Meghan Markle, but I thought this might interest some people. This is an article that was in the one of the big British newspapers. All you have to do is spot the logical fallacy in Harry and Meghan's reasoning, as featured in their historic ratings-busting Oprah interview. Number one, I don't read the tabloids, but they're so unpleasant I had to leave the country. That's a problem.
Mm.
Number two,
yeah,
the racism in Britain was so bad we've come to the United States. number three, for security reasons, it's better to live in a country where everyone has a gun. Yeah. Number four, as a mere A-list actress on a top-rated show, I was totally unprepared to enter the media spotlight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Number five, we wanted our son to be a royal prince, although royalty is a gilded cage that makes people trapped and unhappy. Mm-hmm. Number six, as an American actress and friend of Hollywood celebrities, I did not have the phone number of a therapist. Love that. Number seven, my letter to my father is deeply private. Harry's unanswered phone call to his father should be shared with the world. Number eight, Meghan is not to blame for me leaving the royal family. That's Harry. I couldn't have done it without her. Yep. Number nine.
Oh,
no, these are good points. Number nine. I'm broke, apart from the millions my mother left me. Yes. And number 10. I love my grandmother so much, I'm completely loyal to her. Fuck you, Granny.
Oh.
Spot on. So there's some truth. Finally, some truth about Meghan and Harry in one of the British newspapers over the weekend. One last
thing. Yeah, I think it was the Business Insider who particularly did some investigation into how much money Harry actually has. And there's no way he can pull the pity party card with regards to how much money he doesn't have when they this list of the initial inheritance that Lady Diana left he and William.
Yeah.
And I think it was around 6 point something, rounded up to £7 million each.
Mm.
And because it was invested well in a wide variety of things,
yeah,
that was easily in the 20 odd million pounds. And then when the Queen Mother passed away, Harry also got something left in the inheritance. So he cannot pull a, please, do not put in money thing.
And while we're blaming things, I just want to ask Cyril, please, our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, please can we stop? It's now 26, almost 27 years since the fall of apartheid. Can we stop blaming apartheid for all the stupid things that your government is not taking care of? Like load shedding, for example. This is a story from last week, Eyewitness News. South Africa will overcome load shedding like apartheid.
Ooh, I nearly said last year.
No, this year. Oh, this is 2019. SA will overcome load shedding like apartheid. Can we please just stop with apartheid references? Like, it's almost like when people refer to the Holocaust. It's just, it doesn't feel like it's a sensible thing to do. And of course, there are still things that we are dealing with from apartheid. I think everyone is aware of them. But if the president keeps using apartheid as an excuse for everything, it's going to eventually undermine his whole story. I don't think it's doing him any good to be doing that. Seriously.
Well, Gareth, he's a lot of things, but he's also still a politician at the end of the day. And you need a narrative that suits everything that you say and do. So that still works.
Oh, by the way, just on the Harry and Meghan thing, quickly, because Sia has just sent me this, a different Sia has sent me this message to say, maybe they need a GoFundMe account. Well, they did set up a GoFundMe account. Someone set up a Backer Buddy or GoFundMe or whatever it might have been. And it only managed to gather, I think it was $100 and something. So that didn't work very well. People are not sympathetic enough to give Harry and Meghan all their money. Sorry, everybody.
Because I highly doubt it came from them.
Well,
they wouldn't do that.
It didn't come from them, but it came from a fan who was trying to give them money. And it didn't gather any. Nobody went, oh, shame, let me give my money to these millionaires. Because it's silly.
Someone who did try that over the weekend was Kylie Jenner. And it's so...
She did?
Just distasteful, just silly. Kylie Jenner's makeup artist recently got into an accident and I think like sustained head injuries to the point where $60,000 is needed for them to get adequate surgery. And Kylie billionaire Jenner had the audacity to preach an advocate and be an advocate for this GoFundMe account. What's $60,000 to you as a billionaire? So instead of her coming off as like, oh, let's just help my makeup artist out, people were like, excuse me, you can easily afford that for your very own makeup artist. We aren't going to get involved in this. And I think that's a rightful reaction.
Can we stop thinking that people who start a GoFundMe are the good people here? The people who actually pledge the money and who do give the money, because a lot of people pledge and then they never give. The people who give the money are the real heroes, not the people who start the movement. Where do they get credit? Just for stuff like, you know, Kylie Jenner doing this. I mean, that doesn't make you a hero. You haven't done anything. Unless you're giving your own money, who cares that you started a GoFundMe for someone else? That you're not a good person because of that. Sorry. You don't get any credit. Not from me. Am I being unfair? Mm-hmm.
Leanne, you're on mute.
Yeah, Leanne is going, she's not so sure.
I can't keep up with technology anymore, guys. I give up.
You give up just because you were on mute, or do you give up because you don't believe in the GoFundMe nonsense?
Well, that too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. And how embarrassing. It would be like me setting up a GoFundMe to buy 4 loaves of bread.
No, it's stupid.
It's ridiculous.
Very, very stupid. So at least that didn't work for Harry and Meghan. Not that they were involved, but the idiots who set that up for them, because they felt so sorry for this prince and princess that they thought that other people would feel sorry for them too. It failed dismally. It didn't get out of the starting blocks. And a good thing that is.
So silly.
That's all we got time for today, I'm afraid. We will be back tomorrow and through the course of this nice short week. It's only 4 days of work for most of us this week. So tomorrow, Wednesday, we will be back 6 a.m. bright and early. Make sure you don't miss it. CliffCentral.com. Have an awesome day. We will see you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com.